Welcome, AMGO Podcast 12.19.
Bummer, man. I mean, just bummer.
Alright guys, who's up for talking about some society-wide failures at every level of responsibility?
Someone else go first.
I'm Seth.
I guess I'm Brian.
I'm the person who talks too much.
And speaking of society-wide failures, how about the opposite of that, our sponsors?
Well, the AMGO Podcast is brought to you by Underground Printing and the Bose Store. Get started on your custom apparel order today at undergroundshirts.com. Also, let's not leave out our associate sponsors, Homeshire Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residency in Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Field Client Insurance Group, Information Entropy, and the University of Michigan Alumni Association. There was going to be one more, a sports book, but unfortunately, it's canceled for the moment.
Lovely. All right. Well, so obviously the big news is that Michigan Athletics is on a 2-week shutdown, apparently because someone returned from the United Kingdom where a new strain of COVID called B117, which is more easily transmitted, exists. And a Michigan athlete caught it, and then nobody quarantined him or her, from the federal government to the state government to the county government. I don't know if the county can do that. To Michigan itself. And they've had an outbreak of this strain within the athletic department. If you went to the Meijer or Briarwood Mall on Sunday, January 17th, if you were at Meijer from 9 to 10 a.m. or Briarwood Mall from 1 to 2 p.m. on that day, go get tested. Because apparently this person went to the mall and went to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And now we have no Michigan Athletics for 2 weeks.
At least.
Well, yeah.
That was a very strangely worded statement. It's hard to tell whether they meant it could be more than 2 weeks or it could be less than 2 weeks because of the wording.
Yeah.
But I would guess that if proper precautions are taken, it's at bare minimum.
Well,
unless
I guess
testing clears everything. Like, I don't know. It's a weird. I read it as
maybe they're going to quarantine the teams from each other first, right? Like, there's a lot of.
Well, everything is shut down. They're not practicing.
Well, yeah. But I'm saying that there's quarantine everybody, right? But there's a lot of little connections between each of the team bubbles, right? Like, some of them have to share workout facilities. There are staff that are shared who, like, can do their laundry and all sorts of things. People, academic people that get shared between them. So there's a lot of places where those bubbles can connect. But if you can quarantine for a bit, test everybody, and you have an entire team that has zero cases, it's possible they could reopen that team and keep everybody else. You know what I mean? I think they're leaving themselves a door in case there's a reasonable reason to, you know, let some team play.
And there has been word that this strain has not hit the, I think, either of the basketball programs or hockey. So in terms of the sports we pay closest attention to, maybe there's a chance they get back out there soon. But yeah, obviously a very fluid and difficult situation right now.
And I mean, I'm just baffled at how you could possibly have someone come back from overseas and not put them in a box for 2 weeks, right? Like,
it's a pretty shocking failure, given what we know about this, and also makes you wonder, you know, kind of department wide, you know, what are the protocols in place and how hard are they enforcing them? Because, you know, they're you know, it's not like Michigan has been completely clean in terms of COVID stuff. They have had some issues on the women's basketball side. So, and obviously you've got this now. And I mean, we get the COVID email updates. There are positives every week. So
yeah. And one thing we've found is that you can test negative one day and you test positive the next day, but that doesn't mean you're not transmitting the day before. You might have a lower risk because you don't have quite the viral load at that point, but it's not foolproof, which made the decision to play the Purdue basketball game. Well, now that's moot.
Well, you can tell. Now we know, right? If you have the B117 strain, then we got it from Michigan. And if you don't, then it was Purdue.
Well, I mean, Purdue had Sasha Stefanovic test positive. And I think it is a little less bad than the initial reports made it seem, because the initial reports said that he tested positive, he's out for 17 days. And that implied that he had tested positive today. And prior to that, he had been with the team. He started showing symptoms after the Purdue win over Ohio State, and he hadn't been with the team for something like 67 hours. Still questionable.
Yeah, it seems that he actually put Ohio State at more risk than, well, his own teammates were probably around him at some point. Like, even the Ohio State game, it's possibly.
There's a video of, like, the guys in the Purdue locker room loving up on each other after that win.
Right.
They were definitely all exposed to him on Tuesday night. There's no question about that.
So he's the next day he starts showing symptoms. So it kind of feels like there's a non-zero chance that he was able to transmit before that symptoms, because we all know that asymptomatic transmission is a real thing with this, and
the testing isn't foolproof, which is why, like, the NBA keeps having these outbreaks. And So I mean, I'm glad that Juwan Howard asked the team if they were comfortable to play and they requested extra testing, but it's not a foolproof thing, and that's not the decision should not be in the hands of the players.
No, the power dynamic there is just messed up. You can ask the players, but you're not really asking the players.
Well, and I mean, I don't doubt that those players want to play once they're made to feel comfortable enough about it, but the players aren't doctors.
Right.
I mean, you need somebody who really knows how to deal with a pandemic, a literal pandemic, to make these decisions. Otherwise, you're going to keep, I mean, we've seen what happens when you just let the average person make a decision about how to handle this. We're in what we're in right now. We've been shut inside for, you know, nearly a year now. So I don't know. It feels like nobody's really in charge of this, and that's real bad.
Well, literally nobody was in charge of this when this student athlete came back from the UK. If the 17th is like the, I mean, that was before the transition, and, I think someone on Biden's team was like, there's nothing to take over. We're starting entirely from scratch. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not surprised, I guess, but it is.
No,
it's just an incredible bummer. Do we have any more on this, or are we ready to,
I mean, do we want to get into, like, whether the NCAA needs to, like, push some stuff back? Because I think they
oh,
really
hell yes.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, you've got Penn State playing 6 games in 13 days right now, or they were scheduled to until Michigan dropped off their schedule. But if you look at the women's basketball side of the Big Ten standings, that's been so totally blown to pieces by postponements that it's difficult to even tell what order to put the freaking teams in.
Yeah, and the women were going to end up, because they were putting a whole bunch, they put the Michigan State series into a week that was already pretty tight. So, like, the women were going to play, I think, the next 6 games with no more than 2 or 3 days rest between games.
And we're going to see, I mean, this isn't slowing down. Like, the cancellations are increasing, not decreasing, especially on the men's side of things. I don't know how the Big Ten's in kind of a spot right now because the NCAA has these, you know, dates set for the tournament.
Yeah. But, insane.
Which are ludicrous, and they need to move off of those dates. But the Big Ten also, I think at this point, probably, you know, I think it'd be smart of them to put out there that if the NCAA doesn't move the NCAA tournament back, there's absolutely no way a Big Ten tournament is getting played this year, because they're going to need that extra week to get some regular season games in.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to start pushing stuff back, because this is getting ridiculous. And it's also, I mean, we've already moved past this, obviously, but if there was any notion that these guys aren't just athletes first, having to play every other day for our entertainment during a pandemic because they refused to change the schedule for their big cash cow tournament, I mean, yeah, pay the players, please.
Yeah, I mean, we've just kind of elided, we've just gone through, just assumed that nothing needs to be said about, okay, they're playing, is this ethical? Because I think we know the answer, and they're still playing anyway. So,
I mean, they got such a response when they canceled football from the athletes, because the athletes, like, you know, their entire minds have been wrapped around this game for their entire lives, right? Since they were like 5 years old, since they decided they're going to go for this, just to be on this level, you have to have your entire brain wired to think about basketball first. And to have them, you know, we talked about this with the decision making, but also, like, you're going to get a response from them. They're going to want to play because that's how they're wired right now. And you have to take that into consideration when you are taking into consideration their feelings on the matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, we're going to run into this also with the Olympics that have already been pushed back, and spoiler alert, probably are going to get canceled. But you know, that's something people have been preparing their entire lives for. Many of them have a very short window to hit, and that's going to get blown to smithereens most likely, and they're not going to be able to hit it, and it sucks. I mean, there's no way around it, but it doesn't mean that that's just because it really sucks for the athletes doesn't mean that it's the wrong thing to do. Like, at some point, we're in a pandemic. We haven't been in a global pandemic for a century. You know, maybe once a century, you need to stop sports to make sure that a bunch of people don't die.
Yeah, well, good luck with that one. I mean, they're like preparing to open restaurants in Michigan again. And I'm just like, what? How does that make any sense?
There is, like, a ludicrous disconnect between the way people are approaching this and the way, like, the thing is actually going right now.
I mean, bringing it back to the current situation, the B.1.17 variant is a whole different level, right? That is, like, the state has to do something to, if they can, do something to prevent that variant from having an outbreak in the state, because that is way more virulent. And I think Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister, just said the other day that they are finding it's more dangerous than the other one. So, like, getting it is actually worse too. And I don't know if that's been confirmed. It's not what they said on the CDC website. But, you know, if you have a worse variant, this is going to happen when the Brazil version gets here too. And I think there's another version out there too that's been, you know, you have this many people in the world population getting a virus, it's going to morph. It's going to change. And there's going to be worse versions out there. And this is not the first time we're going to have to deal with this. And I think the state needs to do something, anything they can, to prevent this thing from becoming an outbreak.
Yeah. So B.1.17 is more transmissible, but it doesn't appear to be more dangerous.
That was what we were going off of until, I think, this week, Boris Johnson said otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
I think part of the assumption is the danger is in, like, the fact that increased transmissibility means you're going to have a higher load on hospitals, which will eventually lead to a higher death rate, whether or not the strain is actually more deadly.
Well, and a higher load per person, right? Like, the amount you get at the beginning can determine how bad you get the disease. So, you know, if it's more transmissible, each person coming in contact, you get a higher dosage, which would make it therefore more dangerous.
It certainly seems like a good idea to take a pause while we get a handle on this and get some more information, because clearly there's, like, you know, a lot of unknown about out there about this at the moment.
Yeah. And it sucks that it happened to U of M athletics in the middle of, like, pretty good week for our big sports, but, like, that is not what this is about, right? Like, and that is not so much more important than Michigan basketball's defense right now.
I was like, not now.
Yeah. I mean, hockey was fun. Women's basketball has been real fun. The men's basketball has obviously been tremendously fun. And here we are.
At least Ohio State's going to argue that we should, you know, maintain our spot in the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, that's one thing you can always rely on Ohio State to do is be internally consistent. All right, let's take a break, come back, and talk about the Purdue game.
"2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to... Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the big house and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
So Michigan 70, Purdue 53, in a game that felt strange somehow. I mean, part of it was the Sasha Stefanovic thing kind of hanging over everything. But, you know, people in the aftermath of this game talked about how Michigan was sloppy and didn't play well and still beat Purdue by 17. And I guess you can feel that. I mean, it's 14 turnovers for each team. That's 21%. That's bad. You know, and Purdue just can't generate any offense, and that's pretty much it. As soon as Michigan goes up, what, 25-14, and then Purdue can't get it to single digits for the rest of the game.
Yeah, I mean, this was a wire-to-wire one. This didn't feel as sloppy to me necessarily as I think it did. Hunter Dickinson played sloppy, and he had 6 turnovers, which was nearly half of Michigan's output.
Well, one of those was the Euro step, which I felt was...
That's fair. That was awesome and should have counted.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I mean, like, I wasn't so much worried about that. Michigan still gets assists on well over half of their baskets. They're shooting pretty well. They're moving the ball around well. I mean, it felt like another game where Dickinson's impact is certainly not encapsulated by the box score in terms of what he was able to do defensively, and also the fact that Purdue doubled not just Dickinson, but also Austin Davis in this game. So Michigan was able to generate a lot of open shots just from getting Purdue's defense to start doubling and rotating around. And obviously Isaiah Livers benefited a lot from that. He drops 22, goes 3 for 5 from beyond the arc, had a really, really excellent all around shooting game. But yeah, kind of a weird game. But I mean, with Dickinson getting into foul trouble early, I mean, Michigan at one point had a Brandon Johns, Terrence Williams front court out there for, like, you know, some real deal minutes. Like, you know, I thought this was a really, I mean, to have two straight wins where Hunter Dickinson is barely making an impact in the scoring column, and to have those wins come by significant margins, I would say that's a bigger takeaway than anything else from these last couple games.
Hunter Dickinson is not filling the stat sheet, but Trevorian Williams goes 6 for 19 from 2 in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that guy is just a 2 maniac, right? So, like, I know not all of them were that. Not everything was affected by Hunter Dickinson, but especially early on, you could see that Williams was just having a really hard time seeing the basket.
Well, I think I thought Dickinson did a fantastic job of staying on the floor against Williams, because Williams is all about, you know, using pivots and fakes. And, he's 6'10". He's got to rely on some craft.
He's not 6'10".
Yeah. I just looked 6'10". At that listing and read it off.
Our very visual podcast didn't show the quote marks there.
sorry. He's a very generously listed 6'10". In reality, he's probably a solid 6 inches shorter than Hunter Dickinson. So Dickinson knows that, and this has been a trend all year, for both him and really all of Michigan's big men, is he knows that he just has to stay on the ball, stay on the guy's shoulder, and stay vertical. And if you don't get a block out of that, which he does a pretty good percentage of the time, you're going to force a really difficult shot. So a lot of these Trevion Williams shots, he kept going back to turning towards a right hook in the paint. And Dickinson just would not fall for any of the fakes towards the left, and was just on these hooks where Williams was having to put up these, like, you know, sky hooks from, you know, 8 to 10 feet out over somebody who's 7'2" and reaching as high as he can. And they just did not have a good chance going in.
And that's a really impressive thing, because, you know, I went and grabbed Trevion's shot chart from Synergy to put in the preview. And he's like, he's an above average shooter everywhere in the paint. So he's able to turn his, you know, craft into buckets at a high rate. And in this game, he was throwing up prayers. Like, it wasn't like he was missing good shots, right? Like, he was missing trash.
Yeah, I mean, in this game, so you have Williams making less than a third of his shots. And then the other Purdue player to crack double digits is Jaden Ivey, who's kind of their bouncy freshman who's still very much putting it together as an offensive player. He's 3 for 9 from 2 and 0 for 5 from 3 with 5 assists and 3 turnovers. So that, I mean,
bricks.
This is just a defense. Yeah. I mean, this is just a defense that is going to force you into garbage shots if you're not running good offense. And Purdue had a hard time running good offense against this team, and they were taking a lot of garbage shots, and that showed up in the stat line. They end up at 34% on twos, 2 for 12 on threes. And that, I mean,
that's Ivy. I mean, Ivy took it, 5 of those.
Yeah. That didn't feel unfair. Like, Brandon Newman canned his 2 open ones. And then, you know, 3 of those shots are from the extremely broken Aaron Wheeler. So you have to take that 0 for 3 at face value.
And Ivy shooting 18% from 3 on the season.
Yes, so his 0 for 5 is one shot off of being just right on his season average. And Eric Hunter goes 0 for 2. So 2 for 12, actually kind of a fair representation of, like, their quality of looks and which players were taking them. And you still just completely shut them down inside the arc. I mean, it was kind of funny to see, like, don't know, like Purdue puts Isaiah Thompson out there at one point. He is listed at 6'1", which is the funniest listing I've seen in a long time. Because he is absolutely dwarfed by Eli Brooks, who is also listed at 6'1". Also, Isaiah Thompson's older brother, PJ, was on Purdue, played the same position, and was listed at 5'10". So just stop lying to us. But like,
they list him at 160 pounds.
Yeah, you should list him at 5'10 in that case, because otherwise you're concerned for the dude's health.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's we can't put the cornerback on the field because that's too thin level of height weight there.
Yeah. So I mean, but Purdue obviously misses Sasha Stefanovic in this game because he's really their main 3-point threat at this point. But Michigan also just does such a good job of attacking matchups and, you know, game planning for particular teams and just taking teams out of what they want to do. I don't think Stefanovic was going to make a massive difference in this one, considering Purdue had difficulty getting any sort of clean look from anybody else on the court.
Yeah, well, they replaced him with Jaden Ivey, who got up a lot of shots. And I mean, that's partly Jaden Ivey is a disaster factory who was waiting to get into the lineup. But he's also, you know, I don't think Michigan was practicing for him. They're practicing for Stefanovic, who's, you know, decent at getting to the rim, but that's certainly not what his game's about.
I don't think you really need to prep for Jaden Ivey.
No. Just watch him. Just make sure that, you know, you're ready for the crazy rebounds for things that don't even hit the rim.
He's got a top 10 lowest turnover rate in the conference. So he takes care of the rock.
Yeah, it's because he just shoots it every time.
Right. That's true. It's a
can't turn it over when it's going up.
So Michigan actually used four different guys at center for portions of this game. So Dickinson, of course, and Austin Davis comes off the bench for 7 important minutes, goes 3 of 6 from the floor, picks up 4 fouls, 1 short of my ideal. And Brandon Johns actually ends up checking Zach Edey for 5 or 6 minutes. And, you know, all Purdue wants to do is get it to the guys in the post. And Johns does a great, great job. Edey gets up 2 shots in this game, and he gets the free throw line once. But he's out there, and he was grabbing offensive rebounds. He blocked a couple of shots with authority, but they just could not get him set up in the post, despite the fact that Michigan didn't have Hunter Dickinson on him for a fair chunk of his time, because Dickinson's only out there for 23 minutes.
Yeah, that was with Edey getting very much the benefit of the doubt as far as physicality down there.
Well, I mean, we
don't even need to talk about the whistle in this game. But
we do need to talk about the whistle in this game.
It was skewed towards Purdue like that. It was bad. Like, we can go with that. But I do want to mention that I think Edey's bucket came against Austin Davis, if I remember correctly, because I was kind of hoping that Juwan Howard would make that switch to Brandon Johns, because I mean, Edey versus Davis was just a pure post matchup with an enormous size difference, whereas Johns obviously provides a little bit of a different challenge for Edey, especially on defense, because I mean, the dude isn't the most mobile guy out there. But I have been more and more impressed with Brandon Johns at center. His ability to play just as a true center really jumps out, because I mean, he can play that drop coverage, he can wall up on the rim. He's right up there in terms of block rate with anybody on the team. I mean, and rebounding does not drop off with him on the floor either. He's very good on the glass. So I like what I've been seeing after that game. If you pull up the on-off numbers, in about 90 possessions on each end of the floor, Michigan scoring 1.2 points per possession and shooting 61% on twos with Johns at center against real teams, and giving up 0.89 points per possession and 38.5% shooting from two. Those are really darn good. I mean, that's basically what Michigan is doing with Hunter Dickinson at center. So obviously, you know, some of that is matchup based. Some of that is, you know, probably, you know, the lack of a huge sample. But Johns, I think, is earning a bigger role at this point. He's been fantastic.
Well, and Davis was a good matchup against Williams.
Yes.
Those were important minutes for Michigan. He was able to get a couple of buckets. And I don't think Williams's average shot against Davis went up appreciably in terms of expected value. So there are some matchups where Austin Davis, despite not being a particularly modern big is well suited for, and this was definitely one of them.
Yeah, he was, I mean, the same thing as what Dickinson has been doing. Davis walled up well at the rim, and so, you know, he gives up more position than Dickinson, and, you know, doesn't have the same height, and, you know, I mean, we know his defensive shortcomings, but against somebody like Travion Williams, who didn't, you know, where they're basically the same size, that is a matchup that he can play. So I'm not necessarily, my Brandon Johns compliment is not a complaint about the way Juwan Howard managed the rotation in this game, especially given that Dickinson was in foul trouble and not playing that great on offense.
I also like Davis. Like, it seems like it doesn't matter who the opponent is. Both teams are going to score a point per possession when that guy's out there. And when you have like an 11-point lead for the entire game, and you can just like stick that guy out there and kill minutes, and go from like having an 11-point lead with 8 minutes left to an 11-point lead with 3 minutes left, it's just like, what are they going to do?
Yeah, we should start a pool about what tragedy will befall Eli Brooks next. So he started off with the tooth, and then he had the foot injury, and the tragedy in this game was having a 7'4" guy jump on him.
I think we like heard him yell, "Aren't you going to protect me?"
Right in front
me?
Of a ref. Ref's just looking at it.
Like, it was like Zach Edey with Super Mario.
I think it was Paul Selch, and I'm pretty sure that's the ref who threw John Beilein out of a basketball game.
Yep. John Beilein will tell you about that in every game he does color for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
He brought it up again in the Northwestern Penn State game.
Well, they keep giving him Penn State games to remind him about it.
Yeah, they are just throwing him alley-oops there for him to throw down, and he's taken every one of them, and I appreciate it. But yeah, to have Zach, that was totally an over the back, which is also unnecessary for Zach Edey to do, because you're 7'4" and the guy boxing you out is 6'1". But the ball was out of his reach anyway, and so he just ends up folding Eli Brooks like a freaking lawn chair. And so Brooks just laying at the end of the court, like, what do I have to do to get a foul here? Because also in this game, if you were a Michigan driver, I hope you had a football helmet on, because Jesus, what was it going to take to get a call at the rim?
I have no idea. And then there's the horrible block call on Livers where set for a million years. And like, we have not brought up the officiating on this podcast pretty much all year. I'm actually very happy about the state of NCAA officiating generally.
Verticality has solved a lot of problems.
Yeah. And then the flop stuff this year has made that much, much better.
Brad Davison can't do his Brad Davison stuff, and it's beautiful. He got a three-pointer negated for sticking his leg out and also hurt himself trying to do it. It was maybe the best moment of this college basketball season. He wasn't seriously injured, so, you know, we can laugh.
We can say that, yeah.
It was an interesting Ohio State-Wisconsin game to watch from an officiating perspective.
It sure was.
Well, but this game was just completely off the rails.
This was the worst officiated game of the season, I think, by some margin. Yeah. This is the first time I can really remember it sticking as something where it was like, man, like, this has just been consistently one-sided, as opposed to just like, I disagree with some calls and the refs have kind of maybe not maintained good control of this game, or, you know, it wasn't an issue of calling too many fouls or calling too few fouls. This was a home whistle, and there haven't been many of those this season.
We should talk a little bit about Franz, who had a kind of tough night shooting from the floor, but looked active. Like, his shots for the most part were good shots. Like, the one where he ended up falling into the stanchion, like, that was a take all the way from the perimeter against a guy who was in his grill, which I don't know if we've really seen before. And he gets the bucket. That's a good shot. Doesn't go down. Okay. And he's also got 5 assists in this game, plus his usual suite of a block and 3 steals.
Yes.
And his assist rate is up to 18. Like, he's approaching like 2 guard who's your secondary playmaker assist rates here.
He makes it very difficult on my chart to decide whether to count him as a guard or a big because of the different stats that come up for that.
Sure.
I mean, it depends on what end of the floor you're talking about with him. But yeah, I mean, I thought this was like, I thought he played well and just, you know, didn't have his shot fall like you'd hope, but they weren't missing by much. And, you know, one of the things that the broadcast focused on was that he seemed to be getting kind of down on himself. And I think that was in part because he knew he was getting good shots and they just weren't going in. I understand the frustration, especially with the way he's been playing and wanting to, you know, continue to, you know, be on this meteoric rise. I'm also watching this and I'm like, I hope NBA scouts just look at the box score. So like these last few games from Dickinson and this one from Franz was like, you know, Michigan's still winning. Let's roll with this.
Still winning by 17.
Yeah. I mean, and that really is like one of the most notable things about this stretch is that, and particularly this game where you're not getting, you know, good scoring output from, your two most heralded players, is you win by 17 because you still have, you know, maybe not a ton of depth in the traditional way. This is a relatively tight rotation, but there are a lot of guys here who can hurt you. And obviously Livers with his just tremendous shooting ability and real three level scoring ability. I mean, his first shot in this game is a mid-range pull up. He's hitting off the catch three pointers. At one point in the second half, he does that back down mid-range turnaround because he just has that shot in his bag and can do that to people now. And it's a real mean shot to hit on somebody, especially when you're leading by double digits. So to have him and then to have Eli Brooks back in there as a real steadying presence, Brooks hit some tough shots in this game. I was really impressed with his shot making around the rim. So, I mean, that was pretty much all they needed because you hold the other team below 0.8 points per possession. You don't need a lot of scoring, but I mean, with this defense, you can't afford that. And you're not going to get a lot of games, I don't think, where both Dickinson and Wagner are struggling to produce point wise.
I just wanted to point out with Livers that like you get these games sometimes where he is just hyper motivated on defense. And this one, you came out in the box score and the rebounding. Now, rebounding included a lot of box outs of some big dudes, but he was going up and fighting. And like, Michigan saved a bunch of possessions because Purdue, I think, decided just, you know, hit the boards as much as you can, with especially when Edie is out there. And Livers is just fighting for his life down there. And won. I think he had more than twice. And I'm like, one guy had five. Otherwise, he had more than twice of anything that Purdue had as far as defensive rebounding.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue puts up 20 offensive rebounds in this game, and I feel like that doesn't at all fairly reflect Michigan's job on the glass in this one because, I mean, first of all, Purdue missed a lot of shots, and they missed a lot of shots by, like, some pretty, like, ridiculous margins. So it felt like there were a lot of just, like, oh, like, that bounced 13 feet away from the basket where there were no big men kind of rebounds. And while Trevion Williams did pull down 8 of their offensive rebounds, the rest of them were pretty well spread out, including Jaden Ivey gets 3. I think they were all his own misses. So.
And, well, I mean, some of Trevion's were too. There were a lot of like
that
putback attempts that didn't go in.
Missed like 4 in a row.
Yeah. So these were concentrated into, I think, like a few pretty absurd possessions and not necessarily like offensive rebounds where you're going to go back in the film room and go like, man, nobody was boxing out. This is terrible. And meanwhile, you had stretches where, I mean, at one point, Terrence Williams was at center, but they were having Franz Wagner check out, I think it was Zach Edey.
It was.
And he was doing that successfully. And that's nuts. That's just completely bananas. So I mean, Michigan has a lot of guys who can go get rebounds out of their area. Wagner can do that. Livers can do that. Dickinson is aggressive on the glass. So is Johns. And then they're also good at getting bodies on guys and checking them out. I mean, Brooks was boxing out Zach Edey and should have drawn a foul for doing it.
Yeah.
So the box score really lies here in terms of the rebounding performance, I think.
Well, also the number of missed shots is such that so Purdue doubled up Michigan in offensive rebounds 20-10, but the percentage there is 41-32. Because Purdue just missed so many more shots. So it's the gap wasn't as large as you would think just by looking at the raw numbers.
Oh yeah, I'm more saying that like, I mean, it doesn't look good to give a 40% offensive rebounding, but yeah. It's you know, guys constantly tipping the ball to themselves in the same possession. That's kind of a if you took it as like how many of their possessions included an offensive rebound, then this looks a lot better, I think. And, you know, they weren't getting a huge number of second chance points out of it. And meanwhile, I mean, for Michigan to pull down 10 offensive rebounds, considering how well they were shooting in this one, is a pretty good feat from their end. So, I mean, this was a good rebounding game that was hidden by just the horrific shot quality of Purdue for the most part.
Yep. So that was nice. And hopefully we'll see him again in 2 weeks.
Or anybody.
All right. We're going to take a break, come back and talk about two other sports that are now on the shelf.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy. His name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, "Yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it."
I also like I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGO Blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Kind of a divergent weekend for women's basketball and hockey. Hockey gets an important sweep over Notre Dame, which has kind of been the bellwether for their second halves of the season. Meanwhile, women's basketball gets a 50-point performance from Naz Hillman and doesn't win.
That'll happen when you shoot 2 for 20 from three.
Yeah. So I don't even know where to begin with that one. It's just...
I mean, I can try. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to do much better.
I mean, that was last year's women's basketball team, right? Naz is scoring like crazy, and Dilt can't make a shot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd necessarily call out Amy Dilk, who was 2 for 4 from three in this one, and was okay, actually
so
one
all
of the few,
makes.
Yeah, reliable players here. But Haley Brown was 2 for 10. Maddie Nolan was 0 for 5. That's two of your starters right there. Kenray Johnson was actually the only other player who could really consistently get some points. But I just named all four players who tallied points in this game for Michigan. It was Hillman, Johnson, Dilk, and Brown. And Hillman had 50 of Michigan's 77. This was just an astonishing game to watch, obviously, in part because of Hillman. Michigan is down 16 at one point in the third quarter. She single-handedly brings them back into the lead. But then it was kind of a weird ending sequence where both teams sort of were trying to press each other into mistakes once the game got real tight, and Ohio State was able to break Michigan's press, can a three right after Michigan took the lead for the first time. And then Michigan just wasn't able to respond, obviously, with any three-pointers of their own in this one, and just let this slip away despite, I mean, Hillman has the greatest scoring performance in school history, men's or women's, the highest point total of any player in women's basketball this season, a whole bunch of other records. It's impossible to encapsulate how good she was. This was a game where it was almost hard to be upset by the result just because you watched it and you were like, holy crap, I watched that. At the same time, also a pretty disappointing result when you get 50 out of a player and don't win.
And you want to throw that into like the memories of like, okay, do you remember the time we had Naz Hillman? She scored 50 points, and like that has to bring up a loss to Ohio State now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Ohio State's going to want to say, remember the time Naz Hillman dropped 50 on us and we still won either. So, I mean, especially since this really underscores for Michigan, just, I mean, they haven't had Leah Brown for the past, I think, four games now. Their offense has really dropped off in those games. They're just not getting the secondary scoring they need. This is obviously a pretty extreme example of that, but, you know, the three-point shooting has dropped off. Without her, she's also one of their better facilitators, probably their second best after Amy Dilk. And, you know, it really shows in terms of this offense right now is really Hillman or bust in terms of not only from a scoring perspective, but you're really relying on the double teams against her creating a lot of your other shots. This has become a really one-dimensional team for the moment. You just hope that, I guess if and when they start playing again, that Leah Brown is back, because she's the difference between this being a good team and a possible Big Ten champion.
All right. On the hockey side of things, Michigan goes against Notre Dame, and they score the first goal both nights, so they win.
Should also point out that we were able to see this because it was on NBC.
Yes, so on Thursday we get NBC's crystal clear professionally produced internet stream of hockey, and while I appreciate that every year when I get to see it, it's also extremely depressing because Notre Dame can have this and Michigan cannot. So on Thursday, Michigan opens up with 4 goals in the second. A couple of Owen Power point shots get deflected in. Philippe Lapointe has kind of a gritty goal-mouth power play goal. Cam York goes coast-to-coast and then flings it at a Notre Dame player who's literally sitting in the net. And then they review that, and I'm like, this should be a goal. Like, you can't just be in the net. If you could, Michigan State would do that all the time.
I mean, it should have been a penalty, but they also have the, you know, because it's NBC, the very extremely NBC Notre Dame announcers who are, like, trying to make the case that it should be a goal. And it's clear, you know.
I think you might be thinking of the waved off goal on Friday.
Goalie interference.
Yeah. I'm getting
where they just ran over it, dude.
Yeah, they ran over Blankenberg. They just, you know, pinballed him into the goalie, and I was sure that was going to stand, just because, I mean, this is a weekend where Notre Dame takes one meaningful penalty. So they have a trip and call in the second period. Michigan scores on their power play on Thursday. And then, you know, Notre Dame picks up a penalty with 2 minutes left in a 5-1 game. And then on Friday, their first penalty that's not a coincidental minor comes with 1 minute left. And it's just like, you know, I've watched these games, and it is not possible for a team to go an entire weekend and commit one penalty against anybody, let alone Michigan's level of talent. Yeah, it's just not. And I mean, there's guys getting dumped all over the ice. There's interference, and you know, it's something you got to play through right now. But when Mel kind of went off on the officiating earlier this year, he's dead right. Like, the kind of stuff that they're not calling makes the game ugly, and it makes the game hard to watch sometimes against teams like Notre Dame. And it's very frustrating. But, you know, Michigan goes into the third period on Friday. They really need the sweep just to establish themselves as, like, yes, we're here. You know, they get a couple of third period goals late. And they're able to just kind of grind it out. And that's something that they've been inconsistent doing this year. I think the shot totals in both these games are pretty deceptive because they're about even, but I mean, we're talking about Notre Dame just shooting from the perimeter most of the time, just flinging it on net and hoping. And the number of chances Michigan was able to generate was far superior to that on Thursday. Friday was much more even because the passage off goal that opens things up is a fluke where it goes off both legs of a defenseman and just kind of flutters into the net. But
yeah,
Notre Dame...
I felt like the whole weekend kind of started out with like very ice tilt towards Michigan, and then we just were kind of losing steam as it went along. That first period on Thursday, you know, Michigan is they end that period with just like an absolute turkey shoot, where like Notre Dame's players are flagging all over the place, and you know, they're just taking shots whenever they want to. But Michigan also had 4 minutes of penalty kill, like back to back in that period.
Yes,
and like you felt Michigan should have scored two or three goals in that period, and then they come out and score four in the second period, and it's like, okay, now we've got these guys, right? It's the Mel Pearson traditional return to Notre Dame series. But then, like, by the third period of the second game, I really felt it was the opposite, that, you know, Notre Dame was taking the shots that they wanted, and, you know, we were just kind of hanging on.
There were some periods in both games where Michigan was not able to have an organized zone entry, and Notre Dame was controlling the play. But I felt those were stretches of, you know, 6-7 minutes. And then there were a bunch of stretches where nobody was able to do anything. And I felt like Michigan controlled the zone time for most of these games. And that's tough to do against a Notre Dame team that, you know, is kind of scuffling this year, but they were coming off a sweep of the number one team in the country, which is Minnesota. So there was really something there. And now they're 10-6. They're second in the league. They're just 4 points behind Minnesota, but Minnesota does have two games in hand, so it's not particularly close right now because they are rampant. And then if you look at the goal differential, their goals for is 58, their goals against is 33. That's a plus 25 differential. Minnesota is at 40. So
holy shit.
Yeah, there's definitely the two best teams in the league, and Michigan is one of them.
But they're not number one.
But there's a tier here, right? So, and I feel like Michigan might be at that level next year because you could see this coming from Minnesota a year ago. You know, they bring in Bob Motzko, they start recruiting to his preferences, and then, you know, last year they're a pretty good team, and then this year they've really kind of caught fire. And, you know, Michigan's going to lose some guys this offseason, but they're going to get enough guys back. They're going to get another recruiting class in. And then they're going to have sophomores who are super, super talented. And that's when I think that you might see Michigan be the dominant team that they look like early in the year, but are not. They're a very good team. They're not quite the knock your socks off that was a possibility after that Arizona State season series.
Do you have a sense yet of who's going to come back? I mean, is Kent Johnson playing at a level where he's going to want to leave this year? Or?
Usually you get a draft year, even from guys who are pretty high up. And usually you get a second year from defensemen. So the only thing that might change that is like if Owen Power is the number one overall pick. Number one overall picks usually just go direct to the league. Mm-hmm. A guy in Johnson's position, I mean, he's
I think he's pretty young for the 2021 draft, even. Maybe that's not right. But I kind of expect that you're going to get Bordalo back. You're going to get Brisson back. I think you're going to get Kent Johnson back. And Owen Power is kind of an open question. You know, if you look at Michigan's recruiting, they have three defensemen signed up for next year, and they don't have any senior defensemen right now. So Cam York is probably gone. That's part of the plan. But mm-hmm. given the way the guys they've recruited, I think they're kind of expecting that Power might be one and done. But I think they're going to be able to hold on to at least a few of these guys. And
I mean, you can get these forwards an off-season playing together and get a sophomore season with those guys. Like, that is some lightning.
Yeah, I mean, like, their top five scorers are freshmen right now. So get some combination of those guys back, and you're going to be cooking with gas. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about, football coach rotation again. Maybe there'll be some more later.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGO Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Win or lose this season, stop in to Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Yeah! 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to...
Girl, later. need takes hotter than Juwan Howard finding out he couldn't play four games because someone else got infected with COVID who came back from the UK and was not quarantined. What are we even doing here? Seth, I need your hottest take.
I am glad we have Mike DeBoard.
Oh, get out.
What? What?
I know where this is going, and get out.
Dude, he has been a fantastic offensive line coach. Do not make him the offensive coordinator, and no matter what. No matter if your life depends on it, don't make DeBoard your offensive coordinator. But that man could coach offensive lines. And Sharon Moore is a little green as far as that's concerned.
He played offensive line.
He did. He did. I know a lot of guys who played offensive line. And not all of them are, you know, able to coach it. It takes quite a lot to coach offensive line. There's a lot that's going on there. But he doesn't have to do it alone.
Zone left.
Because he has one of the greatest offensive
Zone
line coaches of the
left.
90s and 2000s.
Zone left.
Behind him. And as long as DeBoard is not calling the plays, which he is
Zone
not.
Zone left.
I'm kind of glad that he's on staff.
You killed Ace.
I'm back.
All right.
So
Ace, I need your hottest take.
Oh, I don't know if I can muster the voice. No matter what happens, cancel the Big Ten tournament.
Okay.
I mean,
is that a hot take?
Like, I think in terms of, like, I mean, obviously you want to be able to play it if you can, but even if they, like, push things way back, I would much rather see the Big Ten focus on, like, let's get every team to play 20 games, make it an equal scheduled, a balanced schedule as much as you can, and at least be able to declare a fair and true regular season champion, which is the more, like, you know,
because
especially in a conference like this. Yes. So, you know, will this regular season champion be Michigan by a margin of, say, two or three games if they play the schedule as played out? You know, maybe that's how it's projected on KenPom and Torvik right now. I don't know. I haven't been obsessively looking at those pages on, you know, every day for weeks, maybe even months. But yeah, let's focus on crowning a true and righteous regular season champion.
All right. My hot take is Zach Edey should have played hockey.
Are you putting him in goal for Michigan State?
I'm surprised nobody's tried that. This actually has some biographical background fact. He's from Canada.
Oh.
And they were I was watching a Purdue game and they had like some sort of biographical package on Edey because he played hockey growing up.
Are there photos?
Yes, there are photos.
Oh my God.
And it just he should have kept going. He probably wasn't going to be a collegiate hockey player, but
Ultra Chara.
That guy could just kind of wave his stick around in the defensive zone and probably get some stuff done. You know, I don't even know if that's a stick anymore. That's like a tree trunk.
Yeah, the effective reach has got to be just incredible. That guy could clear out the entire zone with a poke check.
I'm actually like, you know how these biographical facts get embedded in every single game? Like Tom Zbikowski, the boxer.
Right.
No, I haven't watched Michigan basketball ever. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm upset that this doesn't come up every game.
Like, you know, that should absolutely come up.
This guy played hockey. He was like 7 feet tall and in skates. And then he was like even taller because he was on skates. He really is just a remarkable person. Just shape. His shape is remarkable. I remark upon it.
He is the most Purdue of all the Purdue centers.
I want to know his hat size so bad.
I think it's custom.
That's probably a good guess. Fair assumption.
All right. If you would like us to continue doing this extremely silly segment, go get yourself some Fuego Box. They'll send you 3 hot sauces every month chosen for flavor, not merely heat. Go to fuegobox.com/mgoblog for $10 off your first month. All right. So as Seth rather spoiled, we've had some more coaching moves. This one, half baffling, half not baffling. And of course, the baffling part is Ed Warner is out after 2 years as Michigan's offensive line coach. In year one, Ed Warner shows up. Michigan's offensive line is a shambles. He puts together the best blitz pickup offensive line I have ever charted. And, you know, he's got some seniors. He's got some guys who have been around the block. But Michigan is organized. They're vastly improved. He sends 4 guys to the NFL, including John Runyon Jr., who I don't think anybody thought of as an NFL prospect. you know, Mike Onwenu gets to the league and is immediately the best guard in the NFL, maybe. He's up there.
And like over extra tackle.
Yeah. And then this year, you know, you just have all these injuries. You have no ability to judge anything that happened on the offensive line this year. And to me, moving him out for a guy in Sherrone Moore, who's a very good recruiter, but has never coached offensive line, is like, ugh.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this was exactly Michigan's first choice. It does seem like, because there were a lot of rumors flying around that the current coach who would be off the staff to make room for Ron Bellamy was actually Jay Harbaugh looking for, you know, potentially another opportunity. And then once the Jacksonville Jaguars hired Urban Meyer, Ed Warner's name started coming up as a possibility to leave. And that was what ended up coming to fruition. I'm guessing that's not a coincidence. I'd be kind of surprised if, as Sam suggested, there, you know, Sam didn't say there was a good chance of this, but he, you know, said there was a chance that Warner sticks around in an analyst role. He's still one of the best offensive line coaches in the country. That would surprise me quite a bit, although it'd be great if they could somehow pull that off. Yeah. But I mean, at least, you know, Sherrone Moore was a good offensive lineman as a player. It's been a while since he coached the position, but hopefully he's able to make that transition. But this is clearly a coaching staff that is now way more geared towards recruiting acumen, I would say, than you know, at least proven, you know, coaching technician ability. You know, half the staff is about my age, so
I think everybody on staff except Harbaugh is younger than Tupac.
Who's younger than us?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know.
losing Warner, it's hard to sugarcoat that one.
I don't get it. Like, I know Ron Bellamy is going to help in-state recruiting. I know that he made West Bloomfield a power after it did nothing in football forever and ever. Like, I'm excited to have him on staff, but if you're asking me, like, is it worth getting rid of an established offensive line coach, I would say no.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's fair at all. I don't think it's fair to Ronnie Bellamy to, like, say that Michigan needed to bring him in, or that Michigan decided to, like, push aside Ed Warner.
Yeah, I don't think that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be something more to the story. And if he goes and coaches with the Urban Meyer in Jacksonville, that's one thing that would make sense. If there's something personal going on, or Ed Warner's always kind of moved up to be offensive coordinator before he left his previous stops. So it's, you know, it's possible that maybe he wanted an offensive coordinator job and was upset about being under Gattis. And I don't know if his contract was up, that kind of thing went down.
I would lean more towards the wildly unprecedented happening of maybe he didn't totally get along with Jim Harbaugh. I know that's a crazy thing to suggest, but it's almost like Harbaugh really wears guys out.
I mean, if anyone can get along with Harbaugh, it's an offensive line coach.
Really? He's gone through them, like, you know, fast.
He had Trevno forever.
I mean, yeah, but since he's come to Michigan, he brought in a second one, and then that guy left.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
And then fired Trevno, and then we had Warner, and now Warner's gone.
I can't fathom, because, you know, once you, like, start talking to coaches and watching coaching film, it's clear that offensive line coaches are a different breed. Like, it's almost so you have an offensive coordinator, you have a defensive coordinator. And I feel like the third coordinator level position on a coaching staff is OL coach. And
it's either that or strength coach.
Yeah, maybe.
Strength coach is just another one. That's just a fourth one that's really important. But I'm 100% in agreement with you on that, Brian.
So he's got half his offense in the hands of a guy who hasn't done it before. And that's just like, I mean, maybe it'll work out. But, you know, you go into these sessions and they're talking about, like, here's how to make one of these persons do the incredibly unnatural things that OL have to do. And, like, I don't know if Sherrone Moore can do it or not. I did think that I knew that Ed Warner can.
Yeah, I mean, his track record speaks for itself. It does feel like this is a coaching staff with a lot of dice rolls on it, a lot of lottery tickets, and it'd be kind of surprising if they all hit. But at the same time, there might be a lot of talent on the roster for Matt Campbell.
All right, that's a sunny way to end it, Ace. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. Does anybody have Netflix recommendations?
I need takes hotter than Juwan Howard finding out he couldn't play basketball games for no reason other than someone else got infected.
Did you just cut out? I can't hear you.
Yeah, did Brian blow out his mic?
Okay. No, I unplugged it accidentally. So
that's better than blowing it out.